Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, July 15th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
China's economy slows to the weakest pace in 27 years, while monthly data show signs of stability.
Protests continue in Hong Kong as police arrest dozens of demonstrators.
Wall Street awaits earnings from big U.S. banks, beginning with Citigroup.
President Trump is facing a backlash after tweets toward four Democratic congresswomen. Plus, why did the lights go out in Times Square over the weekend? I'm Michael Barr. More coming up.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, it's a five-set Wimbledon thriller. The Yankees take the series with Toronto, and Robbie Cano is heating up.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are gaining ahead of a busy week for earnings. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 4 points this morning, Dow futures up 38, and NASDAQ futures up 9.5. The DAX in Germany is up 0.3%. The CAC in Paris is down about 0.1%, and the FTSE 100 is little changed. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.12%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil down about 0.1% or 5 cents at $60.17 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $6 to $14.18.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1272 against the dollar, and the yen 107.90. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with data out of China showing economic growth slowing to the weakest pace since 1992. GDP rose 6.2% in the second quarter, though readings on retail sales, factory output, and investment all topped estimates. We get more from Bloomberg's James Mager in Beijing.
The really surprising things we're seeing is the unexpected strength in industrial production and retail sales. They were much, much better than expected. And that's especially surprising for industrial production when exports have been so weak. The stabilization of industrial production and retail sales indicates that the domestic economy is actually a lot stronger than people have thought, which bodes well for the economy going forward if that strength continues.
Well, the trade war took a bite out of growth, though, with exports contributing just 20% to China's GDP gains in the first half. That's down from 22% in the first quarter.
Stocks in Asia climb following that data, with benchmarks in Shanghai and Hong Kong reversing earlier losses. Bloomberg's David Angles joins us from Hong Kong with details. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Well, it took investors a couple of minutes, given the amount of data that was actually dumped, to realize that they were actually looking at relatively good set of numbers, especially when you look at the monthly activity numbers. The CSI 300 came off lows to close 0.25% higher. Hong Kong also shook off a lethargic start. Japan, kind reminder, was shut on holiday. We'll need to wait for Tuesday to see how Tokyo's cash market reacts. Overall, though, Asian stocks were better by 0.33%. Apart from equities, though, the more immediate reaction to the Chinese data really came in the bond market in China. Yields creeping higher for the first time in 3 days, with traders reassessing perhaps the amount of forthcoming stimulus from authorities. In Hong Kong, I'm David Inglis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
David, thanks. And a new development in the trade war. According to Reuters, U.S. firms may get approval to restart sales to Huawei in 2 to 4 weeks. The Commerce Department is currently evaluating licenses that would be issued in instances where there is no threat to national security.
Meanwhile, China says it will sanction U.S. companies selling arms to Taiwan. According to the Communist Party's flagship newspaper, firms including General Dynamics, Honeywell International, and Raytheon could be targeted.
Protests in Hong Kong show no signs of slowing. Hong Kong police arrested more than 40 people over the weekend after an anti-government march resulted in clashes with demonstrators. Rally organizers say more than 100,000 people turned out to protest Chief Executive Carrie Lam's bid to allow extraditions to China, while police estimate the crowd at about 28,000. Bloomberg's Dan Ten Kate has more from Hong Kong.
The protesters have been keeping up the momentum quite well. They've been trying to mix things up with the protests. They're not occupying one location, but they're going around to different vicinities all over Hong Kong each weekend and managing to get very sizable crowds. Generally, these sorts of clashes have happened. They've died down. They sort of settle for the week, and then protesters are right back out there the following weekend, still attracting sizable crowds.
Meanwhile, the Financial Times says Carrie Lam offered to resign in recent weeks, but the move was refused by authorities in China. Beijing reportedly insists she remain in office to fix, quote, the mess she created.
Back here in the U.S., bank earnings are front and center this week. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Falling interest rates have sparked concern that net interest income the money banks make from customers' loan payments minus what they pay depositors will suffer. Allison Williams is a senior bank analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence.
We've already had banks sort of talking down the numbers. We've had estimates coming down into earnings. The question is that enough?
And among the banks reporting this week, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Capital One, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, BNY Mellon, and State Street. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And Charlie, it all kicks off this morning with results from Citigroup due out around 8 a.m. Wall Street time. Bloomberg's John Tucker reports.
Citigroup will set the bar for bank earnings, with trading results establishing a target for its peers. Citi will also be the first to comment on the shifting landscape after Deutsche Bank's announced exit from global equities. In recent years, Citigroup has climbed the ranks in equity trading and could capitalize on European banks' pullback in rates trading. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. Oil holding gains around $60 a barrel after Hurricane Barry shut nearly three-quarters of crude production in the Gulf of Mexico. Lingering supply and demand concerns continue to dent the outlook. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil little changed, up 3 cents at $60.24 a barrel. Brent is up 0.3% at $66.91.
Shares of Galapagos are up nearly 16% in Amsterdam after Gilead Sciences raised its stake in the biotech company. Gilead agreed to pay $5.1 billion for an increased stake in Galapagos. That values the Belgian company nearly 10% higher than Friday's closing price.
Shares of AB InBev are down 1.5% after the company suspended the IPO of its Asian business. After reversing plans for the $10 billion offering, the owner of Budweiser needs another way to reduce more than $100 billion in debt.
Shares of Boeing are down 1% in early trading. According to the Wall Street Journal, the 737 MAX jet may stay grounded until early 2020. That's months later than guidance Boeing is privately providing customers. S&P futures up almost 4 points. Dow futures up 30 points. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Michael Barr to get more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump was accused of being racist and divisive by many Democrats after suggesting that four female Democratic lawmakers, led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, should return to, quote, the broken and crime-infested places from which they came from. Three of the four women Trump was apparently referencing were born in the U.S., none is white. The other three are Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, and Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts. Democratic presidential hopeful Senator Kamala Harris said the tweets show Mr. Trump does not understand what the people want from their president.
It is absolutely racist and un-American. And it is an old trope, go back to where you came from, that, you know, you might hear it on the street, but you should never hear that from the president of the United States.
Trump said the lawmakers originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe and should go back and help fix the countries. It's still not clear what caused a weekend power outage in Times Square. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says, though officials confirmed it was not a terrorist attack.
All pertinent city agencies are going to work closely with Con Edison to figure out exactly what happened, exactly how we can make sure it does not happen again.
The five-hour power outage Saturday night forced the evacuation of Madison Square Garden that was in the middle of a Jennifer Lopez concert and brought the subway system to a halt. Louisiana's governor says he is extremely grateful that Barry, now a tropical depression, did not cause the disastrous floods that had earlier been forecast. In a news conference last night, Governor John Bel Edwards said Barry's rains could have been much worse.
Over the next several days, we will start our preliminary damage assessments that will be run out of GOSEP here with some of our federal partners, particularly FEMA, to go out and take a look and see where the damages occurred.
Financier Jeffrey Epstein has a bail hearing today in connection with the sex trafficking and conspiracy charges he's facing. Epstein is hoping the judge will let him out on bail, satisfied he can remain on house arrest in his Manhattan mansion. Prosecutors are urging the judge to hold Epstein without bail.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning, Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. A Wimbledon men's final for the ages as Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic met for the 48th time, yet arguably the most compelling. It's the fifth title for Djokovic.
4 or 5 year old growing up and dreaming to become a tennis player. This always has been the tournament for me, you know, where I wanted to participate, where I wanted to win one day.
He wins a fifth tiebreaker set, 13-12. It's the second time he's won back-to-back titles. Baseball, the Yankees took 2 of 3 from Toronto at the stadium by holding the Jays hitters in check, 4-2. Skipper Aaron Boone as the trade deadline looms.
That group in there is capable of being the best team in baseball, capable of being best team in the world. You know, that said, you know, Cash is going to, you know, look around every corner to where we can improve. It's in a big way or at the margins or whatever. And if something comes to fruition, then great.
Yankees lead the East by 6. Homestand continues tonight with second place Tampa Bay. James Paxton hosting Blake Snell. Mets got a double dose of Robbie Cano over the weekend.
Hangs and gets hammered high in the air, deep to right field, and it's gone. Into the visiting Met bullpen, recessed just right of right center, Robinson Cano is a triple shy of the cycle.
Mets radio second time in as many games. Cano goes yard. Mets took 2 of 3 in Miami. They enjoyed the day off as they head to Minnesota. Dodgers beat the Red Sox in extras. Giants took down the Brewers. A's beat the White Sox. And the Angels beat the Mariners, but they lost Mike Trout with a calf injury. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
And Rob, in other sports news, Procter & Gamble is now supporting the U.S. women's national soccer team's fight for equal pay. Company sponsors U.S. soccer through its secret deodorant brand. It says it will donate $529,000, $23,000 for each player on the team, to help close the pay gap. S&P futures up 4.5 points. Dow futures up 39. NASDAQ futures up 11 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Coming up, we speak with MetLife Investment Management Chief Market Strategist Drew Mattis ahead of bank earnings and on the heels of slowing Chinese growth data. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are moving higher this morning, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 4 points. Dow futures up 38. NASDAQ futures up about 10. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.12%, and the yield on the 2-year at 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.3% or 20 cents at $60.42 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.4% or $5.90 to $14.18.10 an ounce. The euro 1.1271 against the dollar and the yen 107.89. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. President Donald Trump is facing backlash from Democrats after he attacked progressive Democratic congresswoman of color on Twitter, saying they should go back to, quote, the broken and crime-infested places from which they came. The women are American citizens, and 3 of the 4 were born in the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi responded to Trump's claims, calling them xenophobic. A tropical depression that was once Barry is moving north into Arkansas and Tennessee. Heavy rain still threatens parts of Louisiana, but all tropical watches and warnings on the state are expired. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The Red Sox lost, along with the Nationals and Orioles. The A's and Giants were winners. At Wimbledon, instant classic, Novak Djokovic beat Roger Federer to win the men's single title after almost 5 hours. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We bring in Drew Mattis on this Monday morning, Chief Market Strategist for MetLife Investment Management. Thanks for being with us this morning, Drew, as we continue to assess the data that came out of China this morning. Biggest slowdown in growth, I guess you could say, since they started producing quarterly numbers in 1992. Is this a sign the trade war is coming home to roost in China?
Well, I think that's likely. I mean, if you see it, you see it in the data in the rest of the world, and you know, you haven't quite seen it in the U.S. yet because our labor market is still ridiculously strong. But yes, it's a sign. I think the trade war is beginning to hit, and it's probably one of the reasons why you know, both the U.S. and China are moving back towards the negotiating table.
Does this set the table then for a quicker resolution to the trade dispute between the U.S. and China?
Well, I'm not sure there can be a quicker resolution. We think this is going to be one that takes a lot of time. If you look at the issues that China and the U.S. are facing, when we're talking, you know, a lot of those have been simmering for years, and it's just now that the U.S. has found the time and the energy to kind of focus on resolving what they see as some unfair practices. So I think this is going to take a long time to sort out, and you know, we wouldn't look for anything before year end.
With signs of slowdown in China, is there a risk of a spillover effect in the U.S., given that you know, so many U.S. companies have their business in China?
There's always a risk of spillover, but what I found in the past is that risk tends to be magnified by folks who tend to assume an over important level of for the Chinese economy interacting with the U.S. economy. Simply put, you know, we're much bigger to them than they are to us, and yes, U.S. companies operate there, etc. But at the same point, when you really go down to brass tacks and kind of look at what people are saying is happening versus kind of what their exposure should be, you tend to see that China gets blamed for a lot of things. When there's weakness in China, people blame the weakness on China for why they're weak, and it doesn't quite work out that way all the time.
At the same time, the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell has said that the risk of rising trade tensions and signs of slowing growth are leaving the door open for a more accommodative policy. How does this data potentially weigh into that decision-making?
Well, you know, if it was U.S. data, I think it would weigh in a lot more. I mean, I think the U.S. is already on path for a rate cut at the end of this month. I think, you know, the chairman is very clear about that. You know, what I think people on the street are struggling with is, you know, there's a risk of that happening, but we haven't seen it yet. Yet we seem to be getting the, you know, we're getting the insurance move, but we're not really sure we need the insurance just yet.
Do you think that the Fed might be keeping the door open still to a 50 basis point rate cut?
Well, I think if they're talking about cutting, you have to assume that pretty much everything's on the table. But I'd be very surprised if there's a 50 basis point rate cut. Not because maybe the chair doesn't want it, but simply put, you know, there's only so many, you know, they took a long time getting the ammunition they have, and they don't have a lot of it just yet. So I think that they're going to be a little more cautious on this. And if they don't know they need it just yet, it would be more prudent to kind of go on a more sustained basis rather than use everything all at once.
All right. We get earnings season kicking off in earnest this week with bank earnings. What are your expectations heading in?
Well, you know, I the market's clearly looking for earnings to decelerate a lot. You know, I think there, you know, once again, people have been a little pessimistic relative to kind of where these have come out in the last couple of quarters. I suspect that pattern is going to repeat, but it's probably not going to be a great earnings season.
Given that, is there a chance for you know, some kind of surprise? Given that the companies themselves are sort of lowering expectations, could that be supportive of equities?
You know, yes, it could be, but you know, I think we want to be cautious because, you know, simply put, there is a lot going on. There is a lot of uncertainty out there. You know, what we're more worried about actually are CEOs and CFOs responding to, you know, the earnings numbers, to the market behavior during the earnings numbers in a way that causes them to reduce hiring or investment plans. And so, you know, I personally will be watching the claims numbers very carefully. I'll be looking at the ISM data very carefully. And I'll be looking at the bank lending data very carefully that comes out weekly, because all of those, in my mind, will give you an indication of which direction the economy is going to head over the next couple of months.
MetLife Investment Management Chief Market Strategist Drew Mattis, thanks for this. Really appreciate you having you on, as always, here on Bloomberg Daybreak. And as we take a look at the futures contract snapshot, they are pointed modestly higher, with S&P futures up almost 3 points now, Dow futures ahead by 22 points, and NASDAQ futures up 3.5. It is coming up to 5:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we will have more on the market reaction to the latest signs of slowing growth out of China, plus all the latest in business, economics, and finance. I'm Nathan Hager, and this is Bloomberg. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio, streaming live 24 hours a day on the Bloomberg Business App, radio.com, the iHeartRadio app, and Bloomberg.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Futures point to more records for U.S. stocks as we begin a new trading week. It is a busy week with earnings season kicking into high gear and a slew of Fed speakers on the schedule, including Chairman Jerome Powell.
In Asia today, stocks rebounded from early losses after data showing China's economy stabilizing, though growth also slowed to 6.2% in the second quarter. We get more from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
6.2% was the weakest pace in at least 27 years. But factory output, retail sales, and fixed asset investment data all beat estimates in June. It suggests that government stimulus is starting to have an effect. Retail sales in particular jumped 9.8%. That was well above the estimate of 8.5%. And Beijing said that second half data will be better as it continues its policy efforts. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. As for the U.S. earnings season, banks are in the spotlight with JPMorgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America all reporting this week. Allison Williams is Senior Financial Services Analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence.
For all the U.S. banks, it's all about net interest margins, just given the dramatically worsening environment that we've seen. We've already had banks sort of talking down the numbers. We've had estimates coming down into earnings. The question is that enough?
And Citigroup will be the first of the big banks to report. They're scheduled for this morning around 8 a.m. Wall Street time.
And deal news, San Francisco-based Gilead Sciences is raising its stake in Galapagos. Gilead agreed to pay $5.1 billion for an increased stake in the Belgian biotech company.
Shares of Boeing are down 1% in early trading. According to the Wall Street Journal, Boeing 737 MAX may stay grounded months longer than the company is telling customers.
Amazon kicks off Prime Day today. This year, it's 2 days, and it's forecast to take in $5.8 billion.
And the volatility in Bitcoin continues this morning. The digital currency is down 13% to just over $10,000. Futures this morning, again on the rise. S&P futures up 3 points. Dow futures up 24. NASDAQ futures up about 5. The DAX in Germany is little changed. 10-year Treasury, little changed. Yield 2.12%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.33% or 23 cents at $60.44 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $6.10 to $14.18.20 an ounce. The euro 1.1276 against the dollar. The yen 107.86. And straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Still no answers into what caused a massive power outage Saturday in Times Square. Officials have ruled out a cyber attack or terrorism. Bloomberg's Ed Maxter reports Senator Chuck Schumer says Manhattan showed New York City pride.
While the investigation continues into exactly what did happen, Schumer says one thing is very clear. New Yorkers always pull through in the face of adversity.
I heard about a restaurant where the electricity went out, so they couldn't collect cash and they went on the honor system and continued to serve people. The same valor that New York has always shown in crisis, whether it's after 9/11 or anything else, was shown here. New Yorkers always rise to the occasion.
Meanwhile, Mayor Bill de Blasio, along with Governor Andrew Cuomo, say the magnitude of the outage is unacceptable and Con Ed needs to do better.
Bloomberg's Ed Baxter. Democrats are calling out President Trump for a tweet telling progressive freshman congresswoman to, quote, go back to the country they came from rather than criticize the government. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi condemned Trump's tweets as xenophobic. This just in, President Trump told aides he is considering removing Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross after the Supreme Court defeat on adding a citizenship question to the census. That's according to an NBC report. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents were expected to conduct enforcement surges in several cities this weekend. So far, there have been no reports of major actions. Meanwhile, Acting Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken Cuccinelli, was asked about the raids on ABC's This Week.
It shows how far we've fallen that it's even news that ICE is doing its job. This is their job every day, isn't it?
Well, in fact, the numbers are fewer. Under you have fewer people being deported under
That's right.
President Trump and under President Obama.
That's correct.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. Hong Kong's leader said protesters involved in the latest clashes with police could be described as rioters. Bloomberg's Karen Lee is in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong police arrested more than 40 people after dramatic clashes with demonstrators inside a suburban shopping mall near China's border over the weekend kept the heat on embattled leader Carrie Lam. Scuffles broke out as police moved to clear stragglers from an area popular with mainland visitors following the latest mass rally against Lam's government. Organizers said it had drawn 110,000 people, while police estimated the turnout at 28,000. In Hong Kong, Karen Lee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Coming up to 5:36 on Wall Street, Michael, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. In all the years at Wimbledon, there may have never been a finish this exciting.
Second serve from Federer to Djokovic to the backhand. Djokovic returns cross-court. Federer misses long! Novak Djokovic is a Wimbledon champion for the fifth time. And he does it by saving two match points against Roger Federer to prevail.
Back-to-back crowns for world's number one, Novak Djokovic. Second time he's done that at Wimbledon. The fifth set tiebreaker was also the first in any men's final at the four Grand Slams. To baseball, the Yankees picking up where they left off at the break.
Talkman hits a long drive to right. Hit ball is high. Net is far. It is gone. It went over the grandstand into the bleachers. Talkman, the Sockman.
Yankees radio 4-2. They bury Toronto, taking 2 of 3. They have a 6-game lead in the East over Tampa Bay, who pays a visit tonight. Blake Snell battles James Paxton. Mets just as fortunate in South Beach, taking 2 of 3 from Miami, 6-2. All-star Jeff McNeil on starting off the second half on a winning note.
Like I said, the last time we won a series was a while ago on the road, so hopefully take two there and then, you know, go to San Francisco and, you know, take care of business. And
it wasn't drama-free, though, for New York, as manager Mickey Callaway benched Ahmed Rosario, claiming it wasn't disciplinary, rather just some extra rest, yet later referenced a key error in Saturday's game. Mets road trip continues. They're off today. They visit Minnesota on Tuesday. A's and Giants both win. Dodgers beat the Red Sox in 12, and the Angels beat Seattle, but Mike Trout left with a calf injury. He'll have an MRI on Monday. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thank you, Rob. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on the new workers of the world. Also in this week's issue, Deutsche Bank's long road back to its old normal. Elisa Martinuzzi wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
They're making a significant U-turn by exiting the global equity trading business. And a move of this kind is really quite untested. We haven't seen a firm, a bank of this size, pull out of that business in quite this way before.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Curry. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Consolidated Edison, already under fire because of other mechanical breakdowns in recent years, is facing renewed calls to overhaul its network following Saturday night's blackout in New York City. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's sending his top power team to investigate the incident. For the second year in a row, health insurers in Connecticut are proposing rate increases for individuals that are rising faster than inflation, but more slowly than in the previous year. The state insurance department says the proposed average individual rate request for 2020 is 7.8% higher than this year. With the launch of state-funded media consortium that would be aimed at improving local news coverage in New Jersey has been stalled for the second straight year because of budgeting issues in Trenton. The effort has yet to get off the ground because organizers haven't received any of the seed money promised by the state. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thank you. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KMOX in St. Louis, we're talking about Anheuser-Busch InBev seeking a plan B now that it has dropped IPO plans for its Asia business.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, on the first day of Amazon's big sales extravaganza, Amazon workers at a Minnesota warehouse walk out to bring attention to working conditions.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on Rightmove's latest property report, showing London's slump may be bottoming out.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WHAS listeners in Louisville how the University of Kentucky's president is one of the top paid public college leaders.
I'm Ed Corey on WOAI in San Antonio. I'm reporting the U.S. oil rig count fell last week. Equipment was down in both the Permian and Eagle Ford areas.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Morning pointing to potentially more records on Wall Street. S&P futures up 2 more points. Dow futures up 16. NASDAQ futures up 1. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's brought to you by Marks Paneth, LLP. Marks Paneth Tax Advisors have helped family businesses reach their financial goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/tax.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are drifting and U.S. stock index futures are higher alongside stocks in Asia at the start of a busy week for Federal Reserve speakers, corporate earnings, and economic data. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 2 points this morning. Dow futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up about 3. The DAX in Germany down 0.1%. 10-year Treasury little change. Yield 2.12%. Yield on the 2-year 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.2% or 12 cents at $60.33 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.4% or $5.80 to $14.18 an ounce. The euro 1.1279 against the dollar. The yen 107.85. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Democrats are calling tweets from President Trump over the weekend racist. President declaring on Twitter that a group of Democratic congresswomen should go back to the countries they came from. President Trump told aides he's considering removing Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross after the Supreme Court defeat on adding a citizenship question to the census. That's according to NBC, citing multiple people familiar with the conversations. Tropical Depression Barry dumped rain as it slowly swept inland through Gulf Coast states. It spared New Orleans from a direct hit. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The Red Sox lost along with the Nationals and Orioles. The A's and Giants were winners. At Wimbledon, Novak Djokovic beat Roger Federer to win the men's single title. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks for coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. And we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Edward Evans, Bloomberg Opinion Managing Editor, joins us from our London Bureau on this Monday morning. And we begin with AB InBev's Asia IPO falling flat. What's Nisha Gopalan's read on that?
This would have been the world's biggest initial public offering this year. AB InBev pulled the deal on Friday, citing market conditions, but the brewer itself needs to take at least some of the responsibility. This was a concoction far too frothy for investors when Asian economies face an array of sobering realities. Just a quick recap, this was a deal that could have raised as much as $9.8 billion in Hong Kong. The offering would have valued Budweiser Brewing at between 15 and 18 times EBITDA, well above the multiples for rivals like Carlsberg or Heineken, and it would have certainly been a premium to shares of the parent too. You can hardly blame investors for wanting to sit this one out. The US-China trade war is at an impasse and the ripples are widening. Singapore, the bellwether for global trade, on Friday posted its sharpest decline in growth since 2012. But just look at this. It's a mistake to overlook AB InBev's own missteps here. For one thing, the company put itself forward as a purveyor of high-end beer, taking cues from Chinese consumers' growing taste for foreign brands and craft labels. And perhaps the price range didn't look so out of whack when you consider that some the country's brewers trade at anywhere between 15 and 21 times EBITDA, according to Bloomberg data. But investors just weren't convinced that that demand would hold up in a slowing economy. The fatal flaw, however, may have been AB InBev's hubris itself. In deciding against having a cornerstone investor, the company eschewed what is a fixture of Hong Kong's IPO market. It turns out that investors really do like the comfort of big names that promise to hold the stock. The big question now, of course, is what AB InBev is going to do to put a dent in some of that $103 billion of net debt that came with its purchase of SAB Miller.
We're coming up to the final full week of the race for Conservative Party leadership in the UK, Ed. And Therese Raphael this morning has a piece out on the opposition party and the problems it's facing.
It's not just Britain's Conservative Party that's in a crisis of leadership right now. You'd imagine with the Tory party tearing itself apart over Brexit that the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, would be enjoying a huge lead in the opinion polls. But instead, the opposition's embroiled in a crisis just as deep as that facing the government. The European election, Labour put in its worst performance at a national election in almost a century. A recent poll by YouGov put the party in fourth place, trailing not only just the Conservatives, but the Brexit Party and the Liberal Democrats too. And much of this is down to leader Jeremy Corbyn. On Brexit, he hasn't been able to put forward a position. The party is trying to have it both ways on Brexit, in part because Corbyn is himself a lifelong Eurosceptic socialist, and partly because the party under his leadership has been embroiled in a scandal of surrounding anti-Semitism. Last week, Panorama, the BBC programme, broadcast an hour-long investigation into the issue. But viewers will draw their own conclusions from frankly chilling testimonies of party insiders who claim that anti-Semitism isn't just only rife in the party, but institutionalised. So on the big political issue of the day in British politics, Corbyn hasn't been able to put forward a stance. And on with anti-Semitism dogging the party, it's hard for Labour to be credible on any other issue if it can't move beyond that one. Corbyn has faced down leadership challenges before. He faced down one just after the Brexit referendum. He's brushed aside resignations from his shadow cabinet and a non-binding confidence vote of his own MPs. Anybody seeking to challenge him would need the support of 20% of Labour MPs to be nominated. Even if a challenger cleared just that hurdle, beating Corbyn in a vote of party members would be an even bigger task. Don't forget, he has effectively remade this party in his own image with the Momentum Group, a powerful left-wing grassroots movement that is increasingly independent and aggressive. So it looks like, for all his shortcomings, Labour is going to be stuck with Corbyn. And just as the Brexit Party has benefited from the turmoil in the Conservative Party, so the Liberal Democrats are likely to be the likely beneficiaries from Labour's own leadership of crisis.
Bloomberg Opinion Managing Editor Edward Evans, thanks for being with us from our London Bureau. And as always, you can read more of these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion. Bloomberg Terminal customers just type OPINGO on the search bar. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It is time for our Bloomberg Law Report. It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Facebook and other big tech companies would not be allowed to act as financial institutions or issue cryptocurrencies under draft legislation from the House Financial Services Committee's Democratic majority. Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta will step down, but Democrats may still have questions about his involvement in a plea deal for a disgraced financier more than a decade ago. And a new lawsuit accuses United Health Group of mishandling and underpaying claims for substance abuse treatments in the midst of the deadliest drug crisis in U.S. history.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, another legal story we're watching this morning. Lawsuits mounting for Bayer over claims that its weed killer Roundup causes cancer. Analysts are working to calculate the size of potential settlement costs, which range from $2.5 billion to as high as $20 billion. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Wayne State University Law School professor Peter Henning.
Why is the range so wide?
Well, in these mass tort cases, it's hard to estimate what it's going to take to settle everything. Of course, Bayer really wants to see these cases settled. They don't want to get dragged back into a courtroom where they could face, they've already seen once getting hit with a, I think it was a $2 billion punitive damage award. And so they really want to get these resolved. Coming up with a number that will settle them, though, is difficult, especially when you have cases filed in state and federal courts. So just figuring out how to get all of these settled, if Bayer really wants to do that, is you're going to have to come up with a number. I suspect it'll be north of $2 billion. I doubt it'll be $20 billion, but it's going to be in the billions at least.
There's a lot of pressure on Bayer's CEO. He was the architect of the Monsanto takeover, and the company has lost about $38 billion in value since buying Monsanto. Did the market read the costs of the litigation correctly?
What the market really does not like is uncertainty. And so when you're talking about a range of possible settlements from $2 billion to $20 billion, this is what unsettles investors. They want certainty. So for Bayer, the key is going to be, can they come up with a dollar figure that is going to resolve these cases and really just put them behind them? Of course, the other wild card in all of this, too, is that cancers take a while to develop. And so even if they were able to settle every case that's out there now, they don't know for sure if there are other ones coming down the pike. And so I suspect acquiring Monsanto is something that they are going to regret for a while.
And that's Wayne State University Law School Professor Peter Henning speaking to Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures, they're up about 3 points this morning. Dow futures up 27, NASDAQ futures up about 4. The DAX in Germany, little change. 10-year Treasury also little change. The yield 2.12%, and the yield on the 2 years at 1.84%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.25%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.